We are back. Summer is gone. College Golf Talk has returned, and hopefully you have as well. Steve Burkowski, Brentley Romine with you. The calendar says September. Don't know where the summer went, and lo and behold, the college golf season is off and running yet again, my friend. Always good to reconnect and set the scene for the road to La Costa.
I finally have come up for air from all the preseason ranking research that I've done multiple weeks, posted the men's this morning, and it's full steam ahead now. That's always the highlight, I think, is when you work on a project so long and you finally push it out and you publish it and you can wipe your hands clean of any more work. That's always one of the best feelings.
And it's out there. All the teams are retweeting, saying Brentley's got us third, or he's got a couple of preseason All-America selections. So tip of the
cap. I didn't piss anyone off.
Oh, it's part of the process. Part of the process. We're not here to make people happy.
We're not here to make friends.
No. Great summer, though. The summer of Malixi. Rianne winning the girls junior and the women's amateur. Astris Tally, a superstar, the little star in Greek, is on her way to becoming a big star. Just got back from Sunningdale in the Curtis Cup a couple days ago. The place is as good as advertised. Maybe one of the best golf courses I've ever seen in the world, plain and simple. The venue was phenomenal. The competition, great. Proud American, but for Great Britain and Ireland to win, I think enhances that product moving forward. And to have Katrina Matthew, the first professional to ever be the captain for GB and I think the blueprint is now changed in my estimation, or should be moving forward, because there was a dynamic there from them hearing their words that just maybe hadn't been in the past. And why wouldn't that be the case? Matthew, twice a winning Solheim Cup captain, 9 times a Solheim Cup team member, a major champ. Karen Stupples was helping out. She won the AIG Women's Open at Sunningdale. And Sarah Byrne is maybe my new favorite golfer. Love watching her play. Fearless.
She's a Miami girl, though, Burka.
Hey, she's an Irish gal. Wow. She's my new favorite golfer in respect. Didn't know much about her. We read about her second team All-America selection. Love the way she plays golf. At Astris Tally, she just continued her summer, taking down Lottie Woad impressively in singles. But always is sort of the wrap, if you will, of the summer. And next thing we know, college golf is here. And as you said, you mentioned the hard work you put in with your preseason rankings, as I have to defer to my spectacles. My reading is not what it used to be.
You lost your eyesight this summer.
Well, I'm not sure it was ever there. But we're looking at your rankings, and you're saying, top 10 surprises? Who's too high? Who's too low? It's like Florida State in football. Preseason top 10, people had them going to the playoffs, getting a first round bye, they're 0-2.
Should we read the rankings down the list?
Well, yes, I think that's fair. I can rattle them off. Auburn, Florida State, Oklahoma, Texas Tech, Virginia, your top 5 on the men's side, 6 through 10, Vanderbilt, Arizona State, Florida. You wrote a lot here. Illinois and Ole Miss, your top 10. Team that I think might be too high. Oof, you're right. Maybe this is where we are going to lose friends. You usually got them fired up. I'm going to say Oklahoma at preseason number 3. Maybe a bit too bold for my liking in early September.
All right. I almost feel maybe there's a little inherent bias there for underrating them for multiple years. Maybe I am rating them too high. But here's my thought process, Burko. this is probably the first year where we don't see the incredible depth that we have gotten used to with the COVID years and teams being 6, 7, 8, 9 deep the last few seasons, because, you know, people can play college golf forever, or they used to be. Now that we do not have the COVID year in effect anymore, there are very few teams with enormous depth. Certainly you start at the top with Auburn. They still have it. They only lose one player from that starting lineup last year that won it all at La Costa and J.M. Butler. And then you bring in a freshman in Billy Davis. But Oklahoma is another team that I think top to bottom maybe can go 7 deep, 8 deep. Now, on the flip side, they don't have, in my opinion, a first-team All-American type player. We've been waiting for Drew Goodman to be that guy for the last couple of seasons. He hasn't quite gotten there. But when you look at him, you look at Jace Summey in the type of year that he's had the past 12 months or so. Ryder Cowan is poised to take a bigger step forward in year number two. And a lot of experience on the back end, whether it's Stephen Campbell or Jackson Dowell. You know, these are guys that probably are going to need to be in the lineup when it's all said and done for Oklahoma to be their best. But I don't know. It all comes down to, I think, to the job that Ryan Hibble continues to do. When you have a coach like that, I think you almost have to bump teams up maybe 2 or 3 spots in the rankings when you're considering it. Because is Oklahoma probably the third best team in the country on paper? No, but I think they're the 5 or 6. And so you give that little Hibble bump, and that's why I got them at number 3.
Yeah, Arizona State at 7. I get it. We'll see if they can ride the amateur championship of Jose Le Ballester, Preston Summerhays, the back end, maybe question marks there as I scroll down. Arizona at 15th. I think they're a team maybe that could be a little bit better as this year goes on. We've seen peaks and valleys from the Wildcats and Jim Anderson's squad. I could maybe see them a fringe top 10 team by the end of the fall. But, you know, at least who you have at the top, hard to argue. What does Vandy do losing so much? You've got North Carolina at 16. I get it. They lost a ton. You know, are the Fords going to go back to what they were maybe 15 months ago or 18 months ago? Are they healthy? It's part of the dynamic that the first week of September, we can make calls, we can have interviews, we can get information, and 6 weeks from now, we're going to be wrong on half of it. But that's why we love the dialogue back and forth.
Yeah, and the Tar Heels are a team that, honestly, I probably could have ranked even worse. To me, right now, they're a fringe top 25 team, and a lot of that has to do with what kind of player is David Ford going to be. He kind of started to lose some momentum, wasn't the Walker Cupper, you know, All-American stud that we've gotten used to his first couple years in college, started to tail off in the spring, and a lot of that, I think, is the hip injury. You know, he's been nursing that for a while, contemplated surgery on that, but not going to have surgery as of right now, has learned how to manage it, seems to be improving in that regard. But as we've seen with someone like Austin Greaser, who had the wrist injury, almost had surgery going into last season, you know, that's something that is going to be in the back of David's mind. He's going to have to pay attention to that. And this team can't afford to lose him because they are not deep at all. They bring in 4 freshmen highlighted by Ethan Paschal. You bring in a transfer from Texas in Keaton Vaux. These are a lot of unproven players at the back end. And, oh, Maxwell Ford has not had a good summer. So suddenly there's a lot of question marks. Now, the potential is still there. Obviously, with a healthy David Ford at the top, they could be a top 10 team. But to me, out of the schools in the 11 to 25 range, I'm most concerned about them.
Take a look at individuals we think could be the player of the year. Easy to go with Luke Clanton, sort of how he wrapped up the spring, what he did in the summer on the PGA Tour. My question is, how much college golf will he play? Will he try to just chase those PGA Tour U accelerated points to get to 20 by the spring? If he plays a full slate, I think, you know, he would be tough to beat with what we've seen from him. Gordon Sargent went back to school. He has the 20 points. What are we going to get from Gordon? We know how good he can be. Can he be as good as he was maybe as a freshman or a sophomore, but maybe someone off the radar? You've got at number 14. I'm sort of keen into Omar Morales from UCLA. Yeah. Here's somebody in the last 15 months, and the first time I had a chance to meet with him was at golf's longest day in 2023 when he qualified for the U.S. Open, was the first one to tee off at LACC, qualified for the U.S. Open again. He just seems to get better and perform at a higher level in these big events over the last 12 to 15 months. If that trend continues, maybe he's a sneaky pick 6 months from now to be up for the Player of the Year award honors.
Yeah, part of me is wondering, have we been too hard on Gordon Sargent, right? I mean, he did have seven top seven finishes last season, was runner-up at both the regionals and the national championship. To me, I think we've been spoiled because the standard has been so high for him that it would almost be impossible for anyone to kind of meet those expectations time and again. And so maybe it's just maybe it's us, you know, maybe he is not far off to where he was 12, 18 months ago, but the players around him have gotten better, like a Luke Clanton, like a Jackson Koivun, who was ultra consistent last year as a freshman. To me, I think there's still a lot of hope for Gordon Sargent to be the Player of the Year. I mean, this is a guy who's extremely competitive, and all that he's heard for the last handful of months is that he's washed up and he can't play anymore and something's wrong and, you know, he's going to be lucky to make it on the PGA Tour. Like, all of these things, like, you know, he's paying attention to it. Part of me still thinks that there is a good chance that we see Gordon Sargent have his best year of college golf in his final year of college golf. And I want to talk a little bit about your Gators too, Berko, because individually I kind of struggled where to put Ian Gilligan. I have him a second team All-American. Initially I had him a first team, and this is a team I think that could go either way. We saw the summer that they had, especially at the Western Amateur, which I believe, and you could correct me if I'm wrong, this is the first time we've ever had a program with three players in the semifinals of the Western Amateur. I know we've had teammates meet in the final in the past, but as far as I can remember, and it's very hard to look this up, we've never had three. You know, when you add Jack Turner, Ian Gilligan, and Parker Bell as well, who also qualified for the U.S. Open at Pinehurst this summer. I think it's easy to overreact to that kind of end of the summer because, again, it's been a month since then. Like, how are these players going to respond? This is going to be Ian Gilligan's second year now at Florida since starting his career at Long Beach State. I think the onus is on him. Like, can he handle the expectations now? I think there was much expected of him last year when he arrived, but now that he's done what he's done this summer, now that he's closing in on the top 10 in the world amateur golf ranking, now that he's on, you know, potential to be on the practice session for the Walker Cup next year, it's going to be something that he hasn't experienced before. So to me, I think the Gators could go either way. They can either be really good or we could be looking at a team that's maybe the fifth or sixth best team in the SEC.
Yeah, part of the narrative of trying to figure out what summer success or lack thereof translates to a college golf season. We pivot from the men to the women. You've got your preseason top 10, Stanford, Texas, USC, UCLA, South Carolina, the top five, Auburn, Arkansas, Oregon, Arizona State, and Northwestern, your top 10. Stanford loses a lot. Arguably, they will be better. One of the best recruiting classes maybe we have ever seen. So you don't have to feel sorry for Ann Walker and her squad. I'm intrigued of you having Oregon at eight. One of those up and down years, if you will, from Derek Radley. There were times at the Hootie and the Blowfish, the Long Cove Invitational, where they were no good. And they were thinking, oh my gosh, was that just a nice run? They sort of rallied late in the year. So I'll be curious as a preseason eighth. Obviously, Kiara Romero, one of the best players in the country, But will some of these younger players be able to step up and put them in that elite class? I'm not saying they can't, but maybe that would be a question mark. I've got to see it, and I've got to see more than Romero to have them as a top 10 team right now.
Well, right now, that chip on Kiera Romero's shoulder is about the size of the state of Oregon, maybe even bigger. You talk about a player who has left off the final Annika Award watch list last year, but you know, despite being ranked fourth in the scoreboard rankings, you look at a player who was snubbed for the Curtis Cup. So she's been slighted in her eyes time and time again, over and over. To me, you know, this is where we see, all right, what is inside of her? Does she use that as motivation? I happen to think that she's going to have an absolute monster year. You bring in a couple freshmen, you know, Suvi Chaya and also Tong An, both have a chance to play right away. They have DeRay Chung, also a transfer from San Jose State. She could be a piece at the back end of the lineup for Derek Radley. And Karen Siru, I mean, this is someone who had her heart set on going to Stanford when she was a prolific winner in junior golf in the state of California. That didn't end up happening. She was kind of caught on her back foot, hadn't talked to any other programs, ends up at Oregon, doesn't get into the lineup until mid-spring, and then arguably probably their second best player as they go on to make the semifinals of the NCAA championship. So I initially, Berko, I had them a little bit higher, but I think eight is probably a comfortable spot. But again, kind of similar to on the men's side, Florida, you know, they could go either way. So, you know, I'm maybe a little bit more bullish, I guess, on Oregon. But again, I this is just preseason conjecture and predictions and projections. And, you know, as I've proven in the past, I can also be extremely wrong. One team that got kind of a late push into the top 10 is Arkansas. Kind of initially not really on my radar in terms of, you know, one of the 10 or 15 best teams in the country, but we talk about summer success. I mean, can you think of another program that had a better summer than Arkansas?
As good as any.
When you have Maria Marin, Kendall Todd, both make the semifinals of the U.S. Women's Amateur. I think Maria, if she doesn't get hurt, which all indication is she had an MRI, there's just some swelling in that left knee, she's going to be okay. But if she doesn't get hurt there, I think she could potentially have won it all. So that's a team that stock is trending sky high right now. You've talked about the potential to be the best recruiting class of all time with Stanford. I actually think there's no question about it. I mean, when you bring in the type of players that Ann Walker did, Andrea Revuelta is ranked ninth in the world amateur golf ranking. That's the highest recruit that Ann has ever had by a couple world ranking places. Remember back in 2017, 2018, something like that. Maybe even 2016, Alvin Valenzuela was coming in as the 11th ranked amateur, and she ended up having a pretty good college career. So a lot is expected, but as Ann told me when I talked to her on the phone, they're still freshmen. They haven't even gotten to campus yet. That's going to happen later. Stanford doesn't start their fall until the end of September. So it's about how they adapt. And Stanford has gotten lucky in the past. I mean, Rose Zhang was a player of the year as a freshman. Rachel Heck, you know, was a player of the year as a freshman in just one semester of college golf, wins, you know, five or six times. There's been a lot of success, but I think Stanford, in order to be a team that we talk about potentially going undefeated or being far and away the best team in the country, more than one freshman is going to have to adapt right away. But I think when you look at Mia Ortegren and Nora Sundberg, like the pieces are there, like they're going to be absolutely stacked.
Two teams that are at 15 and 17, Wake Forest, LSU. I'm torn with what their falls will look like. You know, Wake Forest, arguably the second best team in the country over the last 3 or 4 years. Their lineup is going to look significantly different. And we talked about it all spring. LSU, the women were built to try to win a national championship this past May with Lindblad and Latana Stone coming back for their fifth and final years. two great coaches in Kim Llewellyn in Winston-Salem, Garrett Runyon in Baton Rouge. Wouldn't shock me if at the end of the fall, either of those teams are in the top 10, or I believe more likely outside the top 25 until they figure out what those new faces are going to look like.
Very good at the top, right? But a lot of unproven players who haven't played a single round of college golf at the bottom of the lineup that they're going to need to get a lot out of. So I'm with you there. That's why I ranked them as low as I did. Here's a team to kind of keep an eye on. And initially I had them right around the top 10, but that's Michigan State at 13. This is a team that, if you remember the year that got canceled because of the pandemic, I thought that was the Spartans' best team maybe ever, or at least since I've been doing this. And this team has the potential to be as good or better than that. Katie Liu had seven top 10s last year. Brooke Bierman forms a solid 1-2 punch for them. They bring in Taylor Keough from Alabama, who is arguably the Crimson Tide's best player last year, or at least the player with the most potential. So there's some depth there. And again, there's a lot of familiar faces in that 11 to 25 range, Texas A&M, Mississippi State, Arizona, but Michigan State's a team that I think could really surprise. And then there's Florida State. I mean, they have the top amateur in the world, both on the men's and women's side. I'm very concerned about, you know, what they have after Mirabal Ting at number two. I mean, there are some players who have battled injuries in their career. There's some freshmen, but I do think if Sophia Fulbrook, who's a freshman that's coming in from England, if she can adapt quickly, that might be enough to kind of keep them in that conversation as a potential match play team.
Yeah, player of the year, you just touched on it, Lottie Woad. What she's done for 7 months, can she settle back in? She's proven no stage is too big for her. And my estimation, she didn't have her best stuff at the Curtis Cup, and GB and I still won. Says a lot just how she found a way to partner up with Sarah Byrne those first four sessions to go undefeated. Pretty impressive stuff. I look at someone you had just outside the top 10, Farrah O'Keefe. I think she could
be the artist.
Yeah, I think she could be a top 3-4 player by the end of the year. Great freshman season, solid summer. I think a new coach coming in, Laura Iannello. It'll be intriguing what she does with Farrah and Lauren Kim, the super sophomores, if you would, to maybe validate what they should have been doing all along. I feel like that squad has underachieved relative to the talent they've had there for quite a few seasons.
Yeah, they have three Big 12 championships, and I think the last 5 or 6 years they've been match play a few times. But you're right. I mean, always seem to kind of leave a little bit on the table as we get into mid to late May. This is an interesting situation too in Austin, because usually right when a new coach shows up, the cupboard is bare, you know, a team is kind of in a downward spiral or at least trending downward. Laura arrives in Austin and this team is loaded. I mean, we didn't even talk about Lauren Kim. I have her just behind Farrah O'Keefe. Cindy Hsu won the Elite Amateur Women's Series points race this summer, so she obviously had a great last couple of months. The only interesting thing that I'm keeping an eye on with this team is the fact that you almost make a 180 just in terms of coaching style. You know, you go from, you know, someone who's very detail oriented, numbers oriented, to a coach who is more of a player's coach, more of a motivator, and Laura, both great coaches. I mean, I think Ryan Murphy did a great job as well during his time there, but it's going to be interesting to see how that program adapts to a completely new way of doing things. We talk about the Stanford freshman too. I want to point out Jasmine Koo from USC. I think there's a potential that she is the best freshman when it's all said and done at the end of this season. We saw what she did this summer, made some good runs at the girls junior and the women's AM. She was on the Curtis Cup team before even hitting a college golf shot. So I think a lot is expected out of her. And then one last thing individually, there'll be some names who people would probably expect to be a second team or first team preseason All-American that are on this third team. And that's, and really honorable mention as well. I'll throw three names at you. Carolina Shikara from Wake Forest, Hannah Darling from South Carolina, and Mega Gane from Stanford. These are players whose resumes are a mile long. They've done a lot of great things, both in college and amateur golf. To me, though, I think all have a little bit of a concern going into this season. Meg obviously withdrew from the U.S. Women's Am with food poisoning, didn't really play a lot all summer. There's a lot of great players on that roster, so I think we could get into a scenario where Mega Gane doesn't qualify for some tournaments this season. Carolina Shikara hasn't had a great summer as well. She's battled some injuries in the past, has missed a lot of time the last couple of springs. This is her last go. Like, how badly does she want to go out on top? So I think this is a really kind of prove it year for her in her last season of college golf. And then Hannah Darling, I thought she had it figured out after winning the Darius Rucker, after having a good first 36 holes at the Augusta National Women's Amateur. I thought she disappointed on that Saturday at the ANWA. This is a player that I just have a feeling she's let some outside noise kind of affect her game. And, you know, maybe being slighted that she wasn't on an Onico Award watch list, or that people are talking about other players before her. I think being able to play almost solely match play this summer and have the type of Curtis Cup that she did, hopefully that is the final spark that kind of triggers a comeback for her. Because remember, she got subbed out after the first round at the NCAA championship. I think she shot like 77 and then didn't play again. So sour taste in her mouth in terms of college golf. She's going to be looking to prove people wrong over her last couple of semesters.
Storylines, we sort of reference it for the men, the PGA Tour U accelerated, you know, the race to 20 for Clanton and Koivin. Will someone else get to that magic threshold as Gordon Sargent has? For the women, the 500 rule following suit with the men. And then you jotted down a note of conference realignment. At least talking to so many coaches, other than a conference championship, teams are still going to play their normal schedules. If you're a West Coast team that now, like Stanford, happens to be in the ACC, you go look at their schedule. They're playing pretty much what they played last year. So I think it's overstated, if you will, from a college golf aspect. As soon as it happened, everyone's like, oh, it only impacts one event a year for. So I don't want to say it's oversold, but for college golf, I believe it is. I really don't think it matters until all of a sudden you maybe say Stanford is your ACC champions this year. It will never make sense to me, but this is 2024. That's where it goes. The 500 rule, to me, maybe that's the biggest hot button topic for the women. Why do it?
It doesn't make sense, I don't think.
I you know, we've seen through all the years of the men having it, a lot of schools stay true, and they're going to play a great schedule. And if they get beat up, they get beat up. And then other schools that maybe lose three seniors, you can be quite honest and say they went soft. They put in two tournaments they would never play in before to rack up 30 wins. Those are the rules. You play by the rules. I'm not quite sure. And we would have to see in April when regional selections come out of, oh, wow, these seven teams would have been in it a year ago without a 500 rule. No disrespect to the countless teams that play, but I've always been a believer. If you don't make a regional bid for women or men, you're just not that good relative to you're the 68th team or the 74th team. You know, I've always thought play better, recruit better, coach better, and it's not a slight on anyone, but I think you're now adding the fabric of, oh, we have to drop out of this tournament and get eight wins, and you will see it. There will be some team at some point that's going to do a late WD and enter a tournament that they otherwise wouldn't have been in. And I'm not a huge fan of that.
Well, now you have to set your schedules on, I think it's like September 1st or something like that.
Oh, so they're okay. Well, we've seen it with the men.
They're trying to nip it in the bud a little bit, right?
But I guarantee you, if we went down to team, and I'm not saying they did, but you know, we reference Wake Forest's lost a lot and LSU. Are they true to what they've done in the past, or is there that outlier where like, well, there's a quick 13 wins? Thank you though, for keeping me in check on that September 1st. Again, I don't know why you're doing it.
Yeah, well, let's just do a case study. I selected a random school in the top 10. That's and it just so happened to be Oregon because they were top of mind. But they're playing a tournament called the Alice and John Wallace Classic in Palm Springs. Now, as far as I know, that could be a great field, but I've never seen that.
First time I've ever heard of the tournament.
I mean, I'm sure Alice and John Wallace are great people or were great people or whatever. But again, I think that kind of proves your point. But at the same time, someone could argue, well, you know, teams ranked outside the top 30 or 35 aren't winning at all anyways. Most aren't even getting to the national championship. That's, you know, that 40 to 50 range is where we see, at least on the men's side, a lot of teams fall victim to that 500 rule. So I guess either way, like, I'm not a big fan of it, but these teams are going to adjust. And the first year of the men back in, I think it was the 07-08 season, four teams missed out on regionals because of the 500 rule that would have qualified otherwise. Those coaches didn't have, you know, a coach on the other side of the hallway to kind of pick their brain and ask them how they can approach this. All these women's coaches are very well prepared, as we're seeing in some of the scheduling. I would be very shocked if more than two teams finished below 500 that otherwise would have qualified for regional. So yeah, to me, it's a big storyline because it's something different and it's something that could potentially have huge impacts for individual teams come the spring. But yeah, I mean, as far as we're concerned, like, we're not fans of it. I don't know if it's super necessary, but again, like, we gotta, you know, shout out the sky about something, and you know, everyone needs something to kind of complain about. So why wouldn't this be it?
Correct.
Oh yeah, and to go back to PGA Tour U Accelerated for a second before I forget, I feel like everyone is talking about Jackson Koivin and Luke Clant, who are at 17 points and 14 points respectively in terms of Accelerated. Both would need to get to 20. By the end of the NCAA championship. Otherwise, their PGA Tour status would not start until the summer of 2026. So any Palmer Cup point or Walker Cup points, those would not, those would count towards a potential PGA Tour card in 2026. And for Clanton's case, you know, once he finishes this junior season, he's not eligible for Accelerated anyways. He's going to go into the normal PGA Tour U rankings. So certainly both of them have their eyes on those postseason awards where you can get 3 points a chunk for winning the Haskins, the Hogan, and the Nicklaus Award. I have heard that maybe in the future those could be reassessed, maybe down to 2 points or 1 point apiece. But as of now, they're three. But don't forget about Ben James. He's at 11 points. So if he has a great season, I think it'd be very hard for him to win the Hogan, considering Clanton's PGA Tour in amateur, in college, all that counts for that award, because it's not just a college-specific award. I think he's almost a lock for that. But if Ben James goes out and wins five or six times this year, perhaps that could, you know, persuade a Hogan Award committee to say, all right, like, we'll give him the nod over Clanton. He sweeps those awards. All of a sudden, he's at 20 points out of nowhere. And it's going to be a cool battle because I don't know if the math is there for more than one of those guys to get their tour card by next summer. So there's going to be a huge battle because if one person wins the awards, the other guy's not going to get those points. The only other option, I think, is for maybe Ben James to improve his world amateur golf ranking. He can earn a couple more there. And then win the NCAA championship, you get 3 points for that. But other than that, I mean, those are the points that are available. It's going to be really fun to see, some of the best players that we've seen play college golf the last decade just duke it out. And I do hope that they play at least a few events head-to-head this season, although haven't actually looked super closely at their schedules. But I think we'll see Clanton Koivin a couple times at least.
We can only hope. We will get our coverage going on Golf Channel next week, headed up to Michigan for the Folds of Honor Collegiate. We're going to have 6 hours each day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of coverage, three dedicated to the women, three to the men. So it's going to be a busy start to get things going. Then a return trip to John Tyson's place at the Blessings Collegiate Invitational. Looking forward to heading back to St. Andrews for the St. Andrews Lynx Collegiate for the second go around. Right back to the Jackson T. Stevens Cup, the Eastlake Cup. And then we will have the showcase at Cedar Crest in mid-November. So in about a two-month span, a half dozen college events coming our way on Golf Channel. So we get excited about the prospects of bringing it to the fans at home.
I'm pretty excited about this Folds of Honor event. I mean, it's huge field on both the men's and women's side. Have you started your homework yet? Because there's a lot to unpack as you go into that.
Slow and steady. A lot will be done before I get on a plane at 6 a.m. Sunday morning. So we're going to hit it fast and furious, trying to get the body clock back on American time. Getting up at 3:30 the last 2 days, it's not been desirable. But, you know, I'll finally return back to U.S. time. But it's fun. Always good to catch up. We are off and running, and we will say it, and we'll chuckle. But in 8.5 months' time, we'll be getting ready to go to La Casa and crown national champs, and we'll blink our eyes, and we'll be there.
What do you do at 3 a.m. when you wake up?
I go back to bed. But then I finally gave up at about 6 o'clock.
That doesn't count. Everyone wakes up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, but I got up at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and would steal.
12 o'clock rock. Yep.
Yeah, so first world problems. It will serve me well, though, as I've got a 7 a.m. oil change tomorrow on one of our vehicles. So I'll be up and ready and be the first one in.
Yes. I was just curious because I didn't know if you went out and mowed the lawn at like 4:30 in the morning to try to get ahead of some things.
Yeah. I get a little jump start on the boys' lunch for school, but that's about
okay.
It.
Fair enough.
I can't wake up the rest of the house. But we are back. We got a couple of fun months on College Golf Talk coming your way. We appreciate, as always, you guys listening, joining, supporting. That's the biggest reason we do it. So for Brentley, I'm Burko. We will see you again right here next week.